You know, where a line in Scripture is placed is very important at times. Consider one of the lines that Ian just read for us. They were thrilled and excited to see the star. Now, certainly, we think that this refers to the fact that that star had led them to where the Christ child was. But consider what had gone before. For they had been in Herod's court just a few hours or so before, in all likelihood. Having traveled many a mile led by the star that was impossible for them to not follow, they had at first not come to the newborn king, but instead to the old mean king, Herod. Herod was not a nice man. I wish you all could see the art that's going on up here. It's fabulous. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Herod right now. So if you want to draw pictures of Herod, feel free, or just keep going with what you're doing. So Herod was not a nice man, power hungry, Roman lackey, ruler over a people vanquished and impoverished, and his time as a ruler was probably not all that different from what Jim Wallace, just recently, Jim Wallace, the founder of the Sojourners community, describes of our present moment in time. Jim Wallace says, this moment in time, and I would say this is very similar to what we would describe for Herod's time, is one in which we see fear, division, hate, racism, xenophobia, mistreatment of women, purposeful denial of truth, and consummate love of money, power, and fame, evident within the highest levels of government and the decision makers of our society. No matter how sweet and fawning Herod's words might have seemed to these visitors from afar, his real self undoubtedly would shine through. His relentless pursuit of power and position and possessions, his utter fear of any challenge before him, his willingness to destroy any whom he considered a threat, as would be evidenced later on by the slaughter of all boys under the age of 2, evidenced by the fact that these wise folk heard in a dream that it wasn't safe and that they must travel a different way. Neither his court or he would not be able to hide, no matter how much he tried to let the folks know that were visitors from afar that, in fact, he was interested in why they were there. These men who had, as Isaiah had said, arisen, recognizing that light had come, that the glory of the Lord was about to arise upon them, had thus traversed afar and had seen instead firsthand right here in the holy city of Jerusalem, as Isaiah had described, a darkness that had covered the earth and its people. The exposure to such malevolence, we all know, can be like a gut punch to our highest aspirations. And I suspect that they might well have left Herod's court that day, dejected and defeated. Yet, the one that Ian just read, we read that instead they left the court not defeated or dejected, but still looking for that light, which as it had already led them to Bethlehem, they were now thrilled and excited to see. Now let's think about the last few weeks. The end of 2018, the start of 2019, I have read and heard many of my share of commentaries on how horrible 2018 has been. The relentless, metronomic ticking of power abused, callous disregard, and disasters that have rained down upon us. Can it thus, those reviews of 2018 can be very similar to a day in the life of Herod's court, where it sucks the light out of even the most positive of folks and makes us forget all the light that we have seen and all the promises that lies before us. And yet, as we read in the Scriptures, they were thrilled and excited to see the star. Those wise folks who had traveled from afar had themselves then been left in Herod's court to deal with all that Herod was going to lay upon them, did not leave defeated and dejected, even though all evidence would tell them that they should be, but instead they were thrilled to see the light that was still in front of them, the light that had guided them. So for just a moment, I want to ask you to focus on the gifts of this past year and the hope that thrives in this very moment. For just a moment, to not give in to all of the folks that have told us that 2018 was such a horrible year and that 2019 is set up to be even worse. Think just a minute of a few things that are going on in the environment right now. Despite the clear evidence that we have of climate change and the resulting struggles that are baked in for generations to come, and that is something that we need to pay attention to, we did see some wonderful successes in the environment. Did you know that pandas, giant pandas and manatees, are no longer on the endangered list as of this year? Did you know that the population of tigers in the wild has risen for the first time in 100 years this last year? Did you know that 20 different countries came together to create over 40 marine parks around the world, protecting a portion of the ocean the size of our country? Did you know that in one day in India, 800,000 volunteers participated in planting 50 million trees to combat the carbon that was going into the air? Did you know that the Ocean Cleanup Project projects to clean up 40% of all ocean plastic in this year alone? That China has chosen to eliminate all new coal plants? That Costa Rica has reached 90% energy through renewables, something that our own state intends to also achieve by the time these folks that are drawing pictures right now are graduating from high school? Did you know that in the world of health, despite the gloomy picture we see nightly on news of death and dying everywhere and natural disasters raging, that there is good news that this year, world hunger reached its lowest point in 25 years? That deaths from natural disasters that we see over and over and over have actually been on decline for the last 100 years because we have gotten better at responding to them, that we are at 1/10 of the numbers that existed 100 years ago for deaths from natural disasters, that countries like Malawi have seen the HIV rate, which was once one of the highest in the world, drop in children by 67%, that an Ebola vaccine was developed this year in Canada that has thus far proved to be 100% effective. Let us celebrate on a day like today that just recently, just last week, in the state of Kerala in India, 3 million women joined hands together to make a 385-mile chain to ensure that women from that point forward would have the right that is given to them by law in their nation to worship as men have always been able to do for all perpetuity, and women shall be able to do that again. 385 miles of 300 women, 300 million women holding hands. Let us celebrate for the first time in the years that many of us can count, gun laws, laws that restrict the use of guns, have actually made progress more than laws that expand the use of guns. Over 50 laws limiting the use of guns have been passed in state legislatures throughout the world, throughout the states, including here in Hawaii. And let us celebrate the fact that that movement for those gun law changes primarily came because of the activity of young people, so young that they are not yet able to vote. Those young people from Marjory Stoneman High School in Parkland, Florida, who reached across the country to other young people, realizing that since Columbine, every student that has been in a public school and in almost all private schools has had to endure lockdown drills their entire school life. And these young people, have stood up and said to we adults, enough. And this much maligned millennial generation is leading the way in so many other places, in climate. In Poland, just recently, at the climate talks that were going on, the star of that moment was a 15-year-old girl by the name of Greta Thunberg from Sweden, who every Friday for the last year had skipped school and gone and sat in silent protest at the seat on the steps of her parliament building so that those adults inside that building would do something to deal with climate change. And her action in doing so has sparked similar kinds of protests across the world by young people who cannot yet vote. And what she said in Poland was, looking at all these officials and dignitaries standing in front of them, said, "You are not mature enough to tell it like it is. Even that burden you leave for us children. We have come here," she said, "to let you know that change is coming, whether you like it or not. The real power," she says, "belongs to the people." The Sunrise Movement, which is leading the conversation over the new Green Deal in Congress right now, that is part of the 75 people that stood and got arrested in Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office just a couple of weeks ago in order to make sure that people pay attention to climate issues, is led by people under the age of 30, one of whom is a graduate of a school here in Hawaii just a few years ago. And let's not forget that just like the wise men who endured what I am sure was a brutal reckoning with Herod and refused to succumb to the shadow that he wished to cast, so too on the days following the election of 2016, there were hundreds, even thousands of people who took that moment not as a time to sulk and hide, but to come out into the open and take a stand and run for elected office. And in these last midterm elections, we saw an astonishing array of firsts take place. For the first time in history, women make up 25% or so of Congress. It's not yet enough, but it is way better than it has ever been. Massachusetts and Connecticut elected their first African-American congresswoman ever. New York elected its first female African-American Attorney General. New York elected the youngest congresswoman ever elected to Congress at age 29. If she wants to run for president, she's got to wait two more election cycles before she can even consider that. Texas elected its first two Latina congresswomen ever. New Mexico and Kansas elected the first Native American women in Congress ever. Michigan and Minnesota elected the first Muslim American women in Congress ever, one of whom was the first person to wear a hijab in Congress, and that same person who 23 years ago came to this country as a refugee from Somalia is now in the halls of Congress. Tennessee and Arizona elected their first female senators, one of whom is the first openly bisexual member of Congress. Iowa elected its first women to Congress, two of them. San Diego and Maine elected their first female governors. Colorado elected the nation's first openly gay governor. And Minnesota sent to Congress the first lesbian mother we have ever had in Congress. Now, I can promise you that as you listen to this litany of firsts, and if you listen to the words that will come out of their mouths and the policies that they may say, the strategy they may have, you may not disagree on everything. But if we are to be the nation that our highest angels self ever aspired to be, it will be because of such diversity, such newness of thought, such candor. And I find it interesting to note that none of these gifts, like the wise men who brought something forward and laid it there before the baby Jesus, these gifts that are now laid before us are the work of a single individual, not even the ones who have been elected, because no one gets elected by themselves. Rather, they are the work of a collective, of a community. David Corton, former Watata lecturer, I believe, in 2006, founder of Yes Magazine, in a recent editorial in which he spent far too much time, I think, lamenting the struggles of 2018, redeemed himself at the end of that article by suggesting that the way forward for us in our nation is to honor our African roots, the birthplace of our very human species, the place where was produced the concept of Ubuntu, often translated as "I am because we are." I am because we are. Ubuntu, now confirmed by the leading edge of contemporary scientists, tells us, in fact, that complex life exists, can only exist in living communities in which organisms together create and maintain the conditions essential to their individual and collective existence. The light that we follow, the light that we emanate, it is a together light. We are in this together. Not as individuals, we are in this as a community of faith, a community of love. And so we think about what is here on our table in front of us. And if we think about what we have been experiencing in these last number of years, and the sense of division and discord and all of that, and the sense of being pulled and falling apart, imagine what those disciples felt in the days that were to follow this meal that they had together. When all gathered around the table and they were able to sing songs, and if we're watching Jesus Christ Superstar, get just a little bit drunk together, and then it all hits the fan, and it all begins to fall apart. And what is most fascinating, though, as you then hear the story of the Christian community, the early church, when they come to understand that indeed he is not dead but has risen within their presence, within their lives, that they are called together not as individuals but as a community. For the early Christian church, though it had heroes like Paul and Peter and James and many others, those folks were always working together to create and form community, a place of love, a place where the light shines not just upon them, but from within them as well. And so as we gather today on this Epiphany Sunday, and we think about that star that guided those wise men from afar, who, by the way, were not Jews, were not Christians, since such did not even exist at the time, but were folks from other cultures and other spiritualities who came from afar because they had been guided by a light and they were seeking that light, so too are we called to celebrate that very presence as well, because we too are guided by a light and we are seeking a light that we wish to allow it to emanate from within us. And those disciples who first gathered around a table like this came to know that truth when they reflected back on those words, when Jesus spoke to them as a community. And when he said that they are broken, he did not speak only as an individual, but that we as a community will be broken. And we have felt that at times, but we as a community, in remembrance of, what has gone before us, will also rebuild and share, because the light, the presence, is within us. just one moment. Sorry, you don't want me coughing into my hand and then serving you this lovely food. And so we remember that on that night, when Jesus was gathered together with a community a bit smaller than this, but we actually know that that community a bit smaller than this was actually, each one of those folks had their own community beyond them, their own community that they would go and they would share the good news with. And they were gathered together around a table, and he took bread and he broke it and he said, "This is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, he took the cup that was there amongst them. He took the wine and he poured it and he said, "This is the cup of salvation, the blood of the new covenant, which has been shed for you and for all. Whenever you gather together, do this as well in remembrance of me." And so, ministering in his name, I offer to you these gifts of the table, these gifts of the whole community. Let us come forward.